Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, January the 31st, 31st day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is Fortuna City Manager Dwayne Riggi.
And I got to sit in your chair this time.
You got to be in that chair.
I can see there's a lot of wisdom. I'm sitting here. I got my hands back behind my head and just relaxed. It's the chair, I found out. Okay. So thank you for letting me sit at this end of the studio.
Not the view, huh?
Well, maybe the view, too.
Yeah, now you can see the racks.
This is an exciting place. I don't know if people have any idea the kind of view you have out of this sound studio.
Well, you know, I did take a couple of pictures of the racks, but it hasn't gone on the website yet because I figured, who wants to be bored to tears to see racks down the hallway?
Come on, this is radio. You can have an image out there. People can think that you're up in this big pilot house overlooking the whole bay and the river and this luxurious view.
It's a slough out there, not the river.
Well, come on. Go with it, Brian. It's radio. You can do almost anything.
That's right. From the Play Show Suites of Studio 18.
Right.
We'll be back with Dwayne Riggi.
You're welcome.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 416. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Fortuna City Manager Dwayne Riggi. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Vince Lombardi. Said, quote, leaders are made, they're not born. They're made by hard effort, which is the price all of us must pay to achieve any goal that's worthwhile.
Okay. That's the guy who did football, right? Or was it basketball? Yeah. Football, yeah. They have kind of like a stadium or something up there in
Green Bay.
Green Bay. I know this well.
A little too much on the military service. Yeah. Huh?
I guess football there.
A couple extra hits to the head.
Huh? Yeah, that cheese head, yeah. It's a concussion. Oh.
The storms we had last week.
We had a few. Yeah.
City of Arcata had a little bit of an issue with their water treatment facility.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you guys do?
We did okay. We had some trying moments at our wastewater treatment plant because, like most systems, ours is old and it leaks. In other words, it takes rainwater into it, and we're not designed to treat stormwater. We treat it's a sanitary sewer, and not like with the East Coast where you do both. So we had some real high flows. Well, with our new permit, we can't just set that stuff aside forever. We have to run it through the plant. And we have a plant that's designed where normal flow is about 1 million gallons a day. We have a permit to go to 1.5, and that's our normal maximum throughput of treating of $1.5 million. We were doing 4.6. So, yeah, we were, and to do that, that's not just, say, is the mechanical equipment, but we were actually treating and staying within our treatment boundaries, because if we don't, there's huge fines to pay. And
are there allowances during storms?
No.
So even if it's surface water that's running off just off the streets, gutters?
Once it goes into your sanitary sewer system,
it all counts the same?
It's sanitary sewage from there on out, and so if you get a surcharge where it's coming out of a manhole or something, that's all finable.
Oh, really? If you get the little water spouts?
Yeah, that's fine. Yes.
Really?
Yes, really.
Huh.
Let me bring you into my world.
How would they? It must be per event, then, not per gallonage.
It's your estimated overflows, and it depends on where it flows. If it goes, assuming that it overflows and goes into your curb gutter and
goes back into your own system.
It goes then down a storm drain, which for most of us down here ends up in a creek, ultimately ends up in a river, and that's a fine. That's what the whole thing's about. They're big fines. Chick-ching. Of course, we pass those on to our ratepayers, which are not very happy about any kind of rate they pay. And I understand that. I'm a ratepayer. But we work very, very hard not to have those fines. And during the stormy weathers, that is quite a challenge.
So is that a capacity issue or draining the swamp before the new water comes in?
It's an investment in your infrastructure issue is what we need to do, and what most of us need to do is make bigger investments into our collection systems, all that stuff, to prevent stormwater from coming into them. And it's like I tell my city council, it's nothing that money can't solve. And the quote,
you can always have the 12-foot round pipe rather than the 2-foot round pipe.
A lot of this goes back because when a lot of these systems were built back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, the mechanism and pipe used is a...
I meant diameter, by the way.
Oh, I know you did.
Okay.
I understand that we...
You were loading up. You were getting ready to...
I know who I'm talking to.
So
I kind of go with the flow, I realize. But my point is they're made out of terracotta pipe, which is, you know, like pot... flower pot stuff. And they weren't necessarily worried about whether they were tight or not, because it didn't really matter, because most of the sewage got to a point and they just got dumped in the river fairly raw or basically treated. Well, those systems leak, and they take water in, means they probably take them out. They need to be replaced. And that's a daunting task on existing neighborhoods and tying all the other lateral system, and expensive when I say daunting. And so we all need to go back and start working on those, because that's also part of our requirements. The regulatory rules for Fortuna, I can speak to in the last 10 years on our discharge for wastewater. I know you didn't want to go this direction, but we're here right now, so I'm going to take an opportunity to talk about it, is huge. It has added a huge cost to treating sewage. Granted, it's important because we believe that we're doing what we need to do to protect the environment. But some of the standards are, I can't explain them as to why they're so important. I think it boils down to 20 years ago, we couldn't measure them. 10 years ago, we could start to measure them. Now we can measure them very, very into the decimal points. And therefore, that's why the regulatory requirements become more intense. There's very little direction that I've seen where there's a cause and effect. If this is here, this bad thing's going to occur. It's, well, you shouldn't have it because that's not part of the natural thing. As an example, we could not discharge our potable water system if we took our water that we treat and send out to our public for as potable water. If we discharged that out of our wastewater treatment plant, we would be violating our discharge permit.
Yeah. Wait a minute. The water we're drinking out of the faucet mm-hmm. isn't good enough for the river?
No, it has too much chlorine in it.
But the do you have fluoride also?
No.
So the fish have weak teeth.
there's other things in the it's bizarre, and you can't explain this to ratepayers because I understand it's very technical. But the point is, I am very pleased that we were able to accomplish and treat effectively 4.6 million gallons of sewage for about 2 days straight, and it took quite a bit of effort, 24 hours a day, for our operators to accomplish that, and we did not get a fine. Whew.
But the inspector, the inspector did come by.
They will. They'll always look at our records, and of course we have to be honest, and we write down what we do. That's what our job is. But they will. There's always there's consequences. But, you know, those are the kind of things that just make me excited, and most people kind of like glaze over their eyes and say, oh, that's really nice, Dwayne.
KINS, that's really nice, Dwayne. KINS News and Information Time, it's 4:23. We'll be back with more from Dwayne Riggi.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money. You won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 4:27. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dwayne Riggi from Fortuna. Dwayne, to continue with the stormwater.
Oh, you like this?
I didn't think you thought that I would go there.
Oh, you love this subject, huh?
Capacity being maximized. Yeah, okay.
Were you talking stormwater or sanitary sewer?
We're talking about water, period.
Okay.
Okay. Acceptable risk.
Yes.
It's a factor for all management decisions.
You betcha.
For government also.
Yep.
If you decided, okay, 4.5 million
Gallons a day.
That's what we're gonna set that. That's gonna be our goal. Mm-hmm. So we can process that. Nobody has to work overtime. Nothing special has to go on. And then beyond that, we'll have some measures we can do. How much would that cost in the infrastructure change from being able to process 1 million a day to 4.5 million?
For our treatment plant and the process to do that, I'm going to make a round estimate because we've been looking at this, maybe 8-9 million just to do this front end part of it, to actually construct it, about another 25 million.
Now, is that the feeding pipes?
And that's the pipe.
And the whole system?
Well, that's that end of it, yeah. That's
just that end of it.
Yeah. Now, you divide that number. Again, that's for a relatively small connection, 5,000 connections. So you divide that number by 5,000. And that's what each ratepayer's share of that cost, that capital construction cost, is going to be, just to construct it. Then there's going to be some operational costs that go along with that. These are the kinds of things that drive rural communities like us up here on the North Coast crazy, because we have such a small number of users and you have these large capital projects and you're dividing them by a relatively small number of users. Whereas if you get in a big urban element, that same project might be twice as expensive to do, but you're dividing it by 25,000 ratepayers. And so the unit...
That would be the big suburban area of Eureka?
Well, maybe not Eureka.
I mean, 25,000 hookups, that's got to be...
Well, yeah, maybe that.
Humboldt Community Services.
Yeah. Yeah. If you go like, for, let's say, Santa Rosa, it changes the equation significantly. And this is the economy of scale issues. And unfortunately, in the rural area, too, is it seems like when we're discharging, which we only have, wild and scenic country around here because that's why we're here, well, there's a special caveat for wild and scenic rivers and bays and things that the urban areas don't necessarily have to follow.
So if we're wild and scenic, what are they, just wild and urban?
Well, polluted as well.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's a different standard. In other words, if it's well, and it's difficult to try to explain this to ratepayers, why we have to charge what we charge per month.
So if we
to
go
treat
back,
sewage.
If we go back to your 5,000 hookups for your 35 million, roughly,
yeah,
projects, about $7,000 a person.
Right.
Over how much time?
Well, that's, you have to have that money to build it. So you have to collect it.
So this isn't like bond,
well,
where
you're going to do it one way.
You
either have
we'll pay you over 25 years, whatever that figure
you
is.
You could do that if you go out for revenue bonds. And let's say divide this up and then spread it over 30-year payments.
Is the 30-year normal?
It's quite normal, yeah.
Okay,
so now you're going to pay principal and interest for 30 years on that kind of investment.
What do you mean interest?
Well, I guarantee you the people that issue bonds want to be want to make a return on their investment.
So just the principal would be, if it was a,
yeah,
you could, flat line, it would be $20 a month.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's over and above operational costs.
Right.
Okay.
So you're saying you probably need to have a couple more people if the facility
I can guarantee you probably you probably even have to double the size because you
might have to kick it up to $25 a month.
But could be just for that feature.
Being able to handle the heavy.
Yeah.
If there are fines.
Yes.
What do the fines normally come in at?
Well, we budget for them because we know you can never go a year without fines. But generally speaking, $150,000 a year.
So the risk reward on having a big old plant, not really there.
Not quite, but that's what they also deal with fines I like your hand signals.
See, it's 431.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a Lampus to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 4:35. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with the unappreciated city manager.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, you just did.
Mics came on.
You said unappreciated. I mean, I tried to be as smooth as I could for you.
You did. That's right. I kind of forget you're doing a radio show here, and But no, unappreciated because that context is people don't have an appreciation for, by and large, sanitary sewer systems. And I don't want to sound like a single tune here, but. We enjoy potable water, but most of the time it's like, well, we just put it in that big round commode and flush, and it's gone. We don't have to worry about it again. Well, it's as I tell people, it's a lot harder.
Somebody does.
It's a lot harder to make clean water out of dirty water than it is to make clean water out of clean water. So I'm not taking anything away from...
I even know a better one.
You do? Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Make dirty water out of clean. That's the easiest, huh?
And we all do that. And to reverse that is why we have to do all this treatment systems.
What are some of the weird things? You mentioned that the drinking water out of the faucet, it's rated superior for most water systems in the country.
Yes.
You can't dump it in the Eel.
Yes.
Because it doesn't fit some governmental standard, even though what we're drinking in the faucet is far safer.
It is
than what's in the river.
Well, it's safer for human consumption. It isn't necessarily safe for the critters that live in the river.
I would suggest the blue algae isn't really that safe for a whole lot of them either.
No, I understand that. But, salmon kind of react negatively to chlorine. They have a tendency to die.
Is there enough?
Salmon?
No. Chlorine to make any difference?
Well, therein lies the measurement. We can measure it very accurately now.
Since you've been reading the book that you might remember that part.
Well, I don't, but I'm over 50 now and I don't remember nothing.
If that's the threshold, we're in the same boat, bud.
I know. Well, don't worry. It gets worse as you get older, I'm finding.
Oh, good.
But anyway, the point is there are different constituents that go in and that, we deal with it because we're discharging to now... something that is habitat for critters, and therein lies the element, not necessarily for human consumption. And there's different criteria there.
So this is the same thing why you can't go in and clean out the creek beds with all the bush and the brambles and all that stuff and help to reduce the potential of flooding in the creeks inside the city, because
that might be good for humans, but it's not good for apparently fish. So what we have to do is try to figure out how we can do both compatibilities. And we have a project now that we're going to be doing on Roner Creek in Fortuna that's going to test that very theory. We got a large...
I'm glad you go to work.
I just love this stuff.
In that building and not me.
We just got a large grant from Department of Water Resources. We were the only community north of Sacramento to compete in this competitive... It was a competitive grant process from the Department of Water Resources, and we had submitted a project that essentially the city's been working on for 20 years or dreaming about for 20 years. And we're trying to deal with a flooding issue on the lower end of Roner Creek, which is essentially the downtown area of Fortuna Boulevard and Main Street and that whole area. And when we get significant flows, well, guess what? It floods. And in the olden days, 30 years ago, you just went in, cut out all the trees, plowed a bigger trench, and the water went right through it. Well, you can't do that now. Fish and game have regulations. This is fish habitat. So we have devised, and we did a lot of...
Are there fish that come up the creek?
Oh, betcha.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen them. You didn't believe they're there. They spawn. They do all kinds of stuff.
Wasn't that the Only Beer campaign a long time ago?
What?
Oh, what were they looking for? And they would... Yeah, I've seen them.
they're there.
That's that over 50 thing kicking in again.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Anyway, this project is just that. It's a flood control and a riparian habitat project that commingles the two sciences of how you do flood control, how you get water moved through an area without posing a risk and a damage to humans and their habitat, at the same time respectful and maintaining habitat for the critters that live in the creek.
I wonder if people from 100 years ago, if they saw what was going on.
No, I don't know.
How much of a gut belly laugh they would have.
It's kind of like the world went to the dogs.
Yeah, or states other than
I know
California. pick a state.
Yeah.
And just the stuff that Californians have done
to themselves. They chuckle at us.
Yeah. Getting back to your terracotta reference to
you like those,
the infrastructure.
Yeah.
How deep are those under the roadbed?
I'll give you an attorney's answer. It depends. It sewer runs by the principle of gravity most of the time. So sometimes you have to be really deep. As an instance, we were having a discussion about repairing a sewer line in an area that's very congested. And that line is 14 feet down, deep.
So when they originally put this bad boy in,
they dug
by
it.
Hand, they dug down 14 feet?
That's what it looks like. And that's that's before backhoes. That's the shovel work. And the point is you had to get that low so that other things would get to it, to that level. So it's an all
plumbing.
Of it. Yeah, it's a plumbing issue. Mm-hmm. You can't you can't run them flat. It doesn't flow. So you have to have a minimum grade slope on all sewer lines. And when you run out of slope, then you have to run it into a pump chamber and then lift it back up to a higher elevation so it flows back down.
The Panama Canal concept.
Yeah.
So when you're looking, this is going to sound really silly, but I think there are probably enough examples we can go, yeah. How accurate are the maps that you have of the infrastructure that was put in 60, 70, 80 years ago? Are they close?
No. Okay. Which is the discussion we had on a project that we've been trying to remedy. It's been on our books for quite some time. Nobody really knew where everything was, so we've been out now digging great big holes. We started with little holes. And looking for a lot of stuff we thought we knew where he was. And sometimes we're off as much as 20, 30 feet as into latitude, as well as depth. And so a lot of times you have to do a great big excavation just to find out what you got there, because a lot of things were done without mapping and people just kind of went this direction. And then it gets further complicated because there's other utilities like gas lines and underground electrical systems that just got laid in, and they were not necessarily mapped 30 years ago. And so,
oh, even 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah, and maybe even 10 years ago sometimes, depending on who was allowed to do the work.
PG&E?
The city.
Sorry, just thinking San Bruno. Sorry.
a developer contractor, that's expensive to keep track of maps of where you put pipes.
But there's no prerequisites or requirements then for those folks to map and then turn those.
There are now. There absolutely are now.
So and experience is counting for something.
We like to think we're learning. And we have requirements to put trace wires, in other words, electrical wire systems, not with electricity in them, but to be able to locate them through running a radio frequency signal, and you can find it from the surface with these detectors and da-da-da-da-da.
Yet another positive use for radio. KINS, News and Information Times 442. We'll be back with more from Dwayne Riggi.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 4:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dwayne Riggi. Dwayne, over the weekend, the Occupy Oakland situation kind of... I don't know.
Ramped up.
So many comments that could be made. But the question that I've got particularly, City Hall was unlocked on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I know. I thought that was unusual, too. It is a public building, and yet you would like to think that public would respect it, but I can't imagine why it needed to be open. Unless there were some offices open, they might work open on Sunday.
Possibly, but going in and tearing up the kids' artists, our artistic efforts and stuff.
Taking the American flag and things like that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, they really scored a lot of points for a lot of us.
It endeared me to the movement.
Have you guys in Fortuna experienced anything, any elements of this?
Not that we've seen, no.
Okay. I've talked to a couple of the police folks, and they're starting to see the moving into unoccupied homes.
Yes.
And then...
We're diligent. We're watching. We don't take it for granted.
But an unrented house or a foreclosed house.
Yeah, it's...
I I don't know how much time you're going to spend there if there's nothing going on.
True, and I guess the advantage that maybe we have in a smaller community like Fortuna is, you know, everybody kind of knows each other around it, and when something like that pops up, and those people don't look like anybody I've known there before, and why are they there? And so we get phone calls like that.
Like new tenants.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, how you doing? Oh, just, you know, the welcome mat from Fortuna PD. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it is not unusual. We're getting those kinds of, if you want to have it, the neighborhood watch kind of things. There's something unusual going on in my neighborhood, and we fortunately have, unless we're really busy, we normally have an officer available to take those calls. I mean, not right that minute, but within the next hour or so, and follow through. And it adds to that level of, living in a safe community.
So what are we going to see in Fortuna the next month we ought to be looking forward to?
Exciting stuff or just more
mundane
stuff?
Is okay too.
Another 4.6 million gallons a day through the treatment plant.
Hopefully not. Yeah, hopefully over the month.
over the month. We don't have a lot of big plans. Quite frankly, my focus, as well as probably my other colleagues, Randy Mendoza and David Tyson, probably have been tied up an awful lot on what we're going to do with the demise of our redevelopment agencies.
Now, Fortuna doesn't have a redevelopment.
Yes, we do.
Committee.
No, we don't have a committee. We have a board. We don't do things by committee.
I understand.
We do things on purpose.
So what is the impact? Is it into the general fund like we're hearing from Arcata and Eureka?
Yeah. Fortuna is a very small agency compared to certainly Eureka or even Arcata. We do not have any staff that is employed by the redevelopment agencies, but we have city staff that do tasks for the redevelopment agency, myself included. And those are going to have to be dealt with, and there are a number of impacts that will affect our general fund significantly. And they're also the big fear I have is this not being able to repay our internal debt.
Yeah, that won't get your attention. So you ought to be able to figure that general direction out in the next little bit.
That's a $5.5 million problem for us.
That would be tomorrow's problem to deal with.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by, Dwayne.
You're welcome.
We've been Talking Shop with Dwayne Riggi. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love, and I'll see you tomorrow.